Buddy, welcome to Emotional Hangs. His name is Kurt Bronneler.
His name is Joe DeRosa.
This is the podcast where men get soft
and
emotional.
Also, all different types of genders get soft, but today specifically, men really get soft.
Are you ready, Kurt?
I think I'm ready. Wait.
1, 2, 3.
Let's get soft.
Beautiful.
Joe, how you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah?
I'm doing well.
Deep down?
Yeah.
Don't bullshit me.
I felt a little off this morning.
Why?
Because I had to get up much earlier than I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're here,
mm-hmm.
and we're recording. We already banged out one today.
A fiery episode.
Yeah, and I think I feel better after that episode.
I feel good.
I feel like I had to get a little...
I feel like I've been vomiting for an hour. You know how good that feels.
It got a little, I wouldn't say political, but it got socio.
It got political.
Oh, not political. It didn't get like, it certainly wasn't a Trump versus Hillary. Like, it wasn't political like that. It was definitely a socio,
yeah,
whatever argument. And I will admit readily, I get very, very nervous having those discussions in Los Angeles. Anywhere else, I feel fine.
Yeah, I know, because you're a bigot, and it must be tough, because people are like, oh, listen to Joe, he's a fucking bigot. You shouldn't be nervous. I appreciate that you feel that way, but everything you were saying was logical and reasonable.
It's just fear. I get fearful because people in L.A. sometimes overreact to things. I don't know why I feel that way. You and I had a balanced discussion, in which you immediately referred to me as a rapist Neanderthal.
Yeah,
that's a good.
And I think that this is.
So
gonna...
you know, sometimes people in LA they just but sometimes they'll have a knee jerk reaction to something you're saying. say something a little out of whack.
For listeners, know that I think the way that these are going to air next week, you'll hear me call Joe a rapist. I believe it was rapist pillager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why would you use
I'd had
words like that.
Do you know that I found out when we did our 23andMe looking for our family?
That you had a rapist in your family?
No. Well, but
can you just, for the record again, for the listeners,
say that you're not a rapist?
Say that you shouldn't have said the word rapist and that I'm not a rapist?
I was using hyperbole. You're not a rapist, okay?
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
But, thank you. Because, you know, these days with these iPhones, they can cut that out.
Thanks, Grandpa. I found out that I have 78%. Did I talk to you about this? That I have 78% more Neanderthal genes than other human beings.
Well, I could have told you that. you walk around like a big oaf.
I drag my knuckles on the ground.
Yeah, you would have been lasted 10 minutes in that fucking Neanderthal tribe dainty red hair.
I mean, just the glasses alone, they would have eaten me.
Yeah. Do you guys want to do something interesting? Do you want to have an event? What if I tell a story and at the end we all walk outside of the cave just to see what happens?
Oh, fuck you. Are you talking about my Montreal show?
Yeah, of course I am.
It makes
me sick to my stomach.
It was beautiful. Do you guys know what I did? I'll tell you. I'll just tell you what I did because I'm never probably going to do it again. I would blindfold half the audience. Then they would follow me outside. We would go into an alleyway. I'd line them all up. They're blindfolded. While they're blindfolded, people would bring out this giant frame that I had made, a wooden frame. And then I would start playing this music, and then everyone would take off, and then I would just say, just watch. Everything that you're about to see was exactly meant to, I scripted it all. It's supposed to happen. And then they would take off their blindfold, and we'd look through this frame, and it was just out onto like a cityscape. And so then all of a sudden, anybody who like walked by or did something or looked in just seemed like I had written it and made it happen for them. Mm-hmm. And it became like this beautiful moment, but it was really just whatever the fuck was happening on the other side of that frame.
That's funny. I just went up there with good material.
That's it. That's the thing. And that's why I stopped doing that bit. Because people like Joe. Sometimes art gets killed. And it's done.
All right.
All right. I'm ready to bring on my... Our guests are absolutely... I'm very excited to have them. They both founded the Found Footage Festival, which they have been touring with and making a living out of for the last 13 years. Please welcome to the show, Joe Pickett and Nick Prewer.
Hi, guys.
Hi, fellas.
Yeah, we're ready to get soft today.
Oh, good.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Good to see you. Looking forward to this. Yeah.
How?
Oh, good.
Did you? I mean, like, did you? How did you guys meet?
Sixth grade. We've known each other since sixth grade. And I think it was Pee Wee Herman, actually, that brought us together.
Yeah, well, not literally. I mean,
well, no, he didn't introduce
us. At our school.
Yeah, it was a party at his house.
We shared a...
He was showing some movies.
Joe, have you met Nick yet? I think our love of Pee Wee Herman brought us together initially.
Yeah, sixth grade. We were like 10 or 11, and that was kind of like the perfect, you know, Pee Wee's Playhouse. And I think like our school was fairly square. We're from a small town in Wisconsin. And I remember very early on the show Small Wonder was on. Are you familiar with...
Oh, yeah.
The robot little girl.
Who lived in the closet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, so we did not excel in academics at all, but I think we had a very advanced sense of irony at an early age. So we were watching this show ironically and like having people over and like making fun of it.
Right.
When everybody else in the school was watching it just like on the surface value.
Right.
And so we kind of felt like we had this little secret language, Joe and I, and we had another childhood friend, Tom, that we're still close with. And so, yeah, we all shared that.
But it must have been like a secret language, especially in Minnesota, where everything, I feel like when I'm there at least, everybody is pretty, very earnest. It's very kind.
Well, yeah, it's actually Wisconsin too,
where
we're from. Yeah, completely different world. Completely different.
You wouldn't even
apples
recognize
and oranges.
I mix them up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kurt lumps all you podunk kicks in one big old dumb pot.
No, but like, I feel like that's like the Midwest is where sarcasm just flows. You know, like, I mean, look at, like, Letterman is from Indiana.
Sure.
And he's the, like, the king of sarcasm.
I do find, yeah, I think that there is a, I agree with Kurt that there is a greater level of genuine politeness out there. But I also think that lends to a greater level of candidness and joking around. And I always feel like people break balls a little more because it's like, hey man, you know that I'm just being friendly.
Right.
I don't mean it.
Well, there's like, that whole Minnesota nice thing too.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like most people are just like, it's Minnesota nice on the surface and that's it.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, so do you think it is just surface?
I think it's just surface. Yeah.
Oh,
for
shit.
The most part. Yeah. I think we're hateful people.
How old are you?
Midwest. Yeah.
How old are you guys now?
41.
41?
Yeah, 41. Yeah.
Nice. You both look great.
Do we really?
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you do. You look like children.
Really?
I think it's the lack of any adult responsibilities for the last 13 years has been kind of kept our youthful glow about us.
Yeah. We did a 9-to-5 job recently, and it was really hard to adjust into that world. It was like a writing gig, and it was like having to set my alarm to wake up and drive somewhere. I was like,
the
and
worst.
You had to like drive far away.
Far away, and it was like, no, thank you.
Yeah, that's rough.
I like the worst. Out of bed and watching cartoons. Like, yeah.
And so how did you guys like get like start Found Footage?
We were just bored teenagers, and like I we grew up in a small town outside of Madison, Wisconsin, and there just wasn't a lot going on, so we would try to make our own entertainment. And that, like what you were saying about the Midwest too, not only is it you need people and you need a lack of anything happening to kind of react against or to react to. And so we would just get creative. And I remember one thing we did pre-VHS was Joe actually moved away at a certain point, but then came back and told us about this thing they'd been doing in their small town called Beaverin. Do you remember that? Where it was
Beaver?
It's the dumbest thing.
Oh, you guys did Beaver? Oh, okay. All right.
I can't wait to find out what this is.
Okay, so you do is you take a fishing pole, and then you'd attach to the hook like a stuffed animal of some sort.
A beaver.
A beaver in this case.
Yeah.
And then you'd put it on the other side of a street, and you'd wait for a car to come across, and then you'd pull it across the street.
Holy shit.
Yeah. No, it's perfectly, like, what could go wrong?
Would cars ever crash?
No, but they would slam on the brakes, because we would just pull them out, like, right as cars were coming. We're so fucking stupid.
No.
So fucking stupid.
But also, it's a high level of like of work to have that. That you could also do some of throw something in a road. But
we,
no,
we,
it's like,
we threw snowballs at cars too. Yeah, that was another thing. Yeah,
I remember watching with Big Jay Oakerson when I moved in. When I, he was the, my first roommate I ever had in comedy. So I was like a year and a half in or something. I remember living with him, and we were watching the Camp Kill Yourself videos, and we loved them and thought Jackass and all that shit was so great. And but they did a thing where they would throw a human dummy, like a human-sized dummy onto the road, and
holy
the cars
shit.
Would screech and freak out. And I remember thinking it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen.
Oh, for sure. Oh,
and
yeah.
Jay being like, that's not funny, man. That's dangerous. Like, and I was like, oh, this is clearly a line in his sense of humor. Like, he does not approve of that.
I think that that always comes back to a story like Joe and Nick's, because I remember a kid that I personally knew was throwing frozen blocks of newspapers off an overpass onto a highway and hit a car and like people died.
And life is
they
ruined
died?
At that point.
Yes.
Yeah. That I mean, is... we're just lucky that our life wasn't ruined.
And so if you have a story like that in your history, you're like, that's not funny. Because you're like, you know that this kid was essentially destroyed because he killed someone.
Exactly. But we think it's hilarious.
12?
Yeah.
He's fine. He's got a life.
He's fine.
I mean, it sucks for the killed people, but he's not in jail right now. He's out. He's living
I wonder
his
what
normal
happened
life.
To him.
Oh, no. He went to jail.
Can I just ask
he
about...
He did not go to... At 12?
He went to juvie. Yeah.
Juvie. That's what I'm saying. Then they wipe your record.
Is it not jail?
No. Juvie is not jail. You live in like a fucking house.
Yeah, but I don't think you can go out and like play with people. I think you probably have to wear it now.
But at 18,
like
they wipe your record clean because you're a juvenile. Yeah.
And with your butt. With your butt. You take a shit and they give you your record.
Literally.
You have to wipe your ass with your record.
But Prince, he could have a family. He could be an accountant right now. It wouldn't matter.
But what was the...
I'm sure he still has nightmares about killing people.
I like how you're hung up with that. I'm hung up on why and how do you freeze a block of newspapers? Like, what's the logistics of that?
Right.
They were wet newspapers that then froze.
Okay.
Yeah, so they
didn't set out to go freeze them.
It was just a happy accident.
And they were just on the walkway.
Oh.
So they're frozen. They're just like throwing stuff off. And he's like, ha-ha,
he's
look
resourceful.
At this. And threw it off.
Well, I feel
and
like,
essentially like a concrete block.
Yeah.
I think like most teenagers, they're little sociopaths for the most part.
Yeah. Their brains aren't developed
but
at that point.
There is a line. Like, that is really dangerous. I think the beaver thing was a little less, you know, people might swerve, but it's not like there were any accidents.
In my hometown, I moved to a small town in Wisconsin away from Nick, and like, we would do it on highways too with boxes. Ooh. We'd pull boxes across. Yeah. And we'd do it out in front of bars when drunks would come out afterwards.
Shit.
We'd wait for drunks to come out and we'd hide in a car behind.
That's funny.
Holy shit.
The smaller the town, I think the more of the crazy. Because like, you've been involved in like counterfeiting money and like, I stopped at the beaver and was about as far as we went in my town.
Beaver?
Yeah. You counterfeited money?
I counterfeited money.
How?
When I was 15 years old.
Oh, that's great that you can talk about it because now they can't arrest you for that.
Yeah, and it was a federal offense. No, and I got caught.
You got caught?
Yeah.
How were you?
Is fine.
And that's one of my top stories.
Yeah, counterfeiting money is exactly equal to killing someone.
No, my buddy's parents for some reason had a copy machine, and it was a black and white copy machine. We would make 20s and 10s and
that's
5s.
Great. You were just photocopying.
And then we would make a bunch of 1s. Then one day we went down to the car wash, and we're like, let's see if it takes one of our 1s.
Well, how did you get it on the other side?
We did 2 copies, and then we cut them out and then glue them together. It was a lot of work.
Yeah.
And then we hung them up on like a clothesline to
dry
them
all up. Oh,
great.
So it looks like a real counterfeiting operation.
Yeah. So we got like 10 $1 bills. We went down to the car wash and we put one in, and we're like, holy shit, like quarters came out.
No way.
Yeah, quarters came out. We spent the whole night doing that. We took all the quarters. We went down to the gas station and we bought lottery tickets at 15. Don't ask me how we were able to buy a lottery
holy
tickets.
Holy shit. You guys were just like, this is how we become millionaires.
Exactly. Oh, no, wow. It was like Ocean's 11. Yeah. Yeah,
that's
I mean,
great.
Like, and then the whole night we just went down there and we bought fireworks, everything with quarters too. We just splayed out the quarters.
You went to the same place and you didn't think that somebody was going to be like, these kids kept coming in with quarters.
Yeah, so we did that one weekend. My buddy continued to do it because he had the copy machine, so he would do it all the time.
Yeah.
Eventually, the guy who owned the car wash waited for him, busted him. He ratted me out. We had to pay our restitution of like $14 or something, whatever it was.
That's
all it was?
Yeah. I mean, it felt like a lot more because we spent the whole, I mean, it's a lot lot of work to cut out the bills.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
Holy and also
shit.
$14 of quarters seems like a lot.
Yes, yes.
Because
yeah.
it's very heavy.
And, they kept saying, like, this is a federal offense and you're in trouble. And I had to apologize to the car wash owner. And it turned out I coached Little League and it was the dad of one of the kids on my Little League
team.
Wow. Yeah. It was a big scandal. And
I love it. I love because it's so smart. Like, if my
yeah.
child
I'm
does
actually
that,
proud of that one, yeah.
I would be proud of them.
Yes.
I would be like, that's fucked up. But I am proud of you.
Now, here's my question. Did that affect the friendship, not maybe on a personal level, but like when he got in trouble for doing that, were your parents possibly like, hey, you don't hang out with that Joe kid anymore. He's bad
news. I feel
news.
Like, no, that's a good question. I mean, we did, there was some distance, but Joe would come down and I would go up to his town. We're about 3 hours away at that point, but we would constantly visit and write letters and stuff at the time. And I feel like there always was a little bit of like, maybe them thinking there's a little bit of Eddie Haskell in Joe, because
yeah.
he was a sort of an instigator of things like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember one time we went to go see the movie Career Opportunities. Unforgettable movie.
Wait, who's in that movie again?
Frank Whaley and Jennifer Connelly.
Of course.
Oh, yeah. Were they
right
like stuck in the Walmart all night or
yeah,
whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And so at the time we didn't have driver's license, so my dad was driving us up in a minivan. And we went up to see the movie, and then on the way up, Joe was like, the part Money for Nothing came on the radio, and the part where he goes, that little faggot, he's a millionaire, right before that, Joe goes, sing it, Nick.
I wanted him to say a bad word in front of his dad.
Yeah. Right. And really then at one point, I remember Joe was sticking up the finger, like the ring finger, like it, but like he's flicking somebody off to cars going by, like
yeah.
sticking it up.
Because technically, you can get away with it, because
yeah.
you're not giving him the middle finger,
right,
you're
right.
giving him close to
and
the
And my
ladder.
Dad was like, Joe, come, you know, so there was some of that, but we weren't like, yeah, we didn't live in the same town at the time that the federal offenses were happening, so...
Yeah.
But yeah.
But
so
wait,
there's...
you know what? We were both shoplifters, though. You got busted for shoplifting. I got busted for shoplifting.
Yeah, I went through a later phase.
What'd you steal? What would you steal?
I would steal like I would steal anything actually.
Uh-huh.
Like I got like a big rush off of it. Like there's one time
yeah.
where I would do like you know the usual candy bars and stuff like that. But then one time I got brazen and I just walked into a gas station, grabbed a box of Upper Deck hockey cards, and just walked out. I didn't even hide it or
You're
anything.
Not a
I
was hockey
just,
fan either.
I didn't give a shit about hockey cards.
Did you get away with it?
I got away with it. I still have that box of hockey cards at my parents'
Holy
house.
Holy shit!
Yeah.
I got caught stealing cassette tapes from a department store called Ports of the World. That only existed in Pennsylvania, and I got in a lot of shit. That was the last time I think
how'd
I stole anything.
How'd they catch
anything.
You? Like, how'd it all go down?
They saw us on camera. Like, me and my friend Rich
oh, wow.
Hutchinson had detention.
They'd like, when was this? What year was this?
93.
Wow, they had cameras.
Yeah, they had cameras. Me and my friend Rich Hutchinson
well,
were...
Well, it's the ports of the world.
Yeah, it is. And it was, there were ports, actual ports that ships would come into. no, but they would, we were in detention and we had to kill like 45 minutes before our parents picked us up after detention ended.
So you figure, go steal some
yeah.
shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a classic post-detention activity.
Because we had done it the week before, and it went like gangbusters. A bunch of my buddies did it, and I was like, I can run this operation on my own. I don't need them to do it. And we went up there, and we stole all these tapes. They weren't even good. I remember one of them was College Boys, which was like one of the shittiest rap groups ever.
College Boys?
With a Z, I assume?
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah. But anyway, we got caught. They didn't call the cops. They just called our parents, and then they fined me. But man, I got a good whooping that night.
Oh wow!
Because my parents were sitting at the school for an hour and a half, waiting for me. So I was an hour and a half late for my 45-minute late pickup.
Oh.
And they thought I was like dead.
Oh.
And then like, and they didn't know where I was. This is pre-cell phones. So I came strolling up, and they were like. They're like, my mom was like ready to kill me. And then I was like, oh, well, wait till I tell you why I'm like.
College boys.
Kurt, you don't strike me as a shoplifter. Did you ever?
As a kid, I shoplifted once,
mm-hmm.
a pack of gum. I got caught. Then in college, textbooks were so expensive and I didn't have enough money.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured out that like all the textbooks had like a little thing in the back of them, which was like would set off the alarm if you walked out with them. But I was tall enough that if I stacked them all on my head and just walked out with them on my head, I stole probably, I don't know, like thousands of dollars worth of every year. I probably had like $1,000 worth of textbooks I had to buy, and every year I stole them.
You would walk out with them on your head?
Stacked up like 8 books, stacked on my head.
That's
and I would
brazen.
Walk out.
But
and
nobody was like, why do you have books on your head?
No, because it's like kids are coming out constantly and they trust this alarm system to work. So I probably stole Yeah, like around $4,000 worth of books from Johns Hopkins Jesus. University.
And if you got caught, would you have said that you were doing some sort of My Fair Lady kind of thing?
So I'd be like, I'm a model. Yeah.
So wait, so I want to get to
finishing school.
Finishing school.
You're right.
So VHS found footage, is that what you're getting into?
Yeah, it's for people who don't know the Found Footage Festival, yeah. Explain what it is, and then how did you start doing that 13 years ago?
So the Found Footage Festival is a guided tour through Joe and I's collection of VHS tapes that were never meant to be shown in public. And so we talk about where we found the videos. This is live in front of an audience and explain the backstory behind this genre of tape we found or whatever.
It's not like movies that we find. It's more like exercise videos and training videos.
They're insane. It's insane what you find. Yeah. It's really insane. And they edit it really well, so you just see all the most insane parts of the video.
Yeah, and we give like a running commentary of jokes and stuff throughout the video. And the other thing we've started doing too is hiring private detectives to find the people in the videos.
Oh, wow.
And then we'll go meet them and play our interviews with them at our shows.
We get obsessed with these videos, and we just need to get to the bottom of them. So yeah, we try to find these people, and we ask them like, "How did this get made?"
I love it.
It's like a little springboard for little tiny documentaries about what's the backstory behind this, and like who is this person that made this crazy, insane thing.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. I mean,
you would love it. You should go see their show tonight or tomorrow. It's so
I think I can maybe
so
go
great.
Tomorrow. I can't go tonight.
It's just tonight, is it?
Well, still go tomorrow.
Yeah. I'll see it on the 14th anniversary.
Yeah.
You guys travel together so much.
Yeah.
I mean, like, how do you not kill each other?
I think, we're kind of like an old married couple at this point. We've been doing this for so long. We're always at
and that
all
the
times.
Love is gone.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The spark is gone.
It's the VHS tapes that are our children that keep us together. Uh-huh. And we're always 2 feet apart at all times. And I always think that it's the fact that we're okay with long silences. Like, we'll be on an 8-hour drive and we will talk for maybe 15 minutes of it. And we're fine with it.
Right.
There are a lot of people that I wouldn't feel that comfortable doing that with. I think that we're good at long silences.
Well, the other thing I think that you kind of fall into a dynamic in any relationship. And I think what Joe loves to do is irritate me more than anything else.
He's the best. He has the best reaction. He's actually gotten better because he doesn't react to it now. But still, I kind of get off on that, too. Right. Him not reacting, trying not to react.
Because still the reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yesterday, we were trying to drive to a meeting or something, and like we're kind of running late for it. And I for some reason, when I plug my phone into the USB of a rental car, it always comes up with the first thing is.
Alphabetically.
Yes. And for some reason, like 20 goddamn years ago, I downloaded the Amelie soundtrack. And so it's always this delightful French accordion, do. I'm just like, I just want to, I'm instantly trying to go off.
And the
of
song's
it.
Called A Kwai.
That's the name of the
Kwai.
Yeah. And so that came on last night as I'm trying to drive and look for directions, and then Joe turns it up. And like, that's just the dynamic that we have on long road trips. And I think the other thing, and I feel like maybe you do this too, but it's hypotheticals.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one, when we have nothing to talk about, and we don't, everything's been covered. So
right, yeah.
It's like, we saw this really attractive woman in Beverly Hills today, and Joe was like, would you... carry around a big heavy box of her stuff and walk around next to her to be in a relationship.
Behind her, carrying her a box of her stuff.
For the rest of
times.
My life.
For the rest of his life. But he gets to, like, he's with her and he gets to, like, doink whenever he wants, and she's a wild cat in the sack. And all just this whole,
And so that was like, there's a lot of people that have said yes to that. But then now it's like, would you get cornrows in your hair and never be able to explain why and carry the box?
Yeah.
And the latest thing with this woman we saw today was, what was it?
Get all your teeth removed except for the front two.
Right.
And for this woman, he said yes to that.
Well, but wow. I said I would need a week trial period where I got to know her and be in a relationship.
And I granted that to him. I gave him the week trial. Yeah. I gave him 5 days with
her. There's negotiations. Would I get to have dentures? All sorts of things like that. And then it's like, I'd have the box at a public thing with her, and then my dentures would fall out. There's like,
we never talk of anything of substance. Like, there's never like, we never get like emotional. Until like anything like that, we talk about stupid hypotheticals.
You're going to get emotional here.
Oh, no,
really?
Yeah.
So you guys have never had a real, argument or something?
I can't think of one.
Not really. Nothing that's like, I mean, we'll maybe get a little fiery over like an idea or something, but it's just a second and then it's gone.
Yeah.
Wow. There's nothing. Yeah. And you know what? I also realized like I don't think we've ever embraced like a hug.
What?
No.
I don't think we ever have.
No. You guys have never hugged each other?
No,
I don't think so.
I hugged you today.
Hugged you today.
We're I'll probably hug you, Joe, by the end of the day. But
I'm fine
I will
with
not
that.
Hug him.
That's I have no problem with it.
That's so crazy. Yeah. You have no problem with hugging or not,
none.
Them not hugging?
I still kiss my dad.
On the mouth, on the lips.
No, not on the lips.
Yes, you do.
Not on the lips.
You kiss your dad on the
Wait,
lips.
Wait, where do you kiss him? On the cheek? You kiss him on the cheek?
We kiss each other on the cheek.
Oh, he thought he was Italian. It's not his fault.
But I have no problem with it. My uncles I do that with. Like, it's not... That's a very normal thing.
I'm fine doing it with anybody else. Like, my dad and I just recently started hugging, probably in the last 2 years or so.
I'll tell you, a few things feel better than a dad hug. You know, it is a very comforting...
Yeah.
It's like, strong usually.
Yeah.
You hug your dad?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we hug.
It feels very safe and like it's family. It feels like family.
It does. It's so weird. No, it's like the weird, like, cause my dad always, he's so like, we don't hang out with that often. So he always doesn't know. He always gives me his hand to shake.
Yeah.
And I always hug him. And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah.
I know, yeah.
It's like, it's not like that comforting for me. It's more just like, when are you going to know after how long that I'm going to just hug you?
Yeah.
Like having to like move around your hand.
I know what you mean. That's how my grandfather was. He'd yell at you if you tried to hug him.
Really?
He's like, you hug the women. You do not hug the men. Which is why my dad was an affectionate person.
Really? Yeah. But you're Italian, right? They're the touchiest feely
technically
people.
Not. The family is, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But my dad's dad was really, like, and he was from Italy, but he was, like, super old school. Like, when my dad went to Vietnam, his dad shook his hand and said, come home safe now. That was his send-off to Vietnam.
I mean, it sounds pretty cool, though.
Shit.
Yeah, it was like there was no.
It sounds pretty cool.
It does. It's like it's like two men.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Two men who are strangers. Sends one to die. It is cool.
I didn't hug my grandfather until he was literally on his deathbed and he was unconscious.
And then as you're hugging him, he's going, stop, I'm not a fag.
I swear to God.
And then he died.
And that's what killed him.
I swear to God, I felt like I was like violating him in some weird way. Like I felt like.
Yeah, he's unconscious. Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of felt like, is this okay that I'm doing this? Like. It was a very weird feeling. Yeah.
I think it's okay to not hug. Like I like my brothers too. I don't hug with my brothers. We did once, and we all agreed that it felt weird. I feel like the closer you are with somebody, the less you have to hug them.
That's a Midwestern.
That's a
Midwestern thing.
That is the weirdest statement I've ever heard.
It's a Norwegian.
The closer, makes sense in my head.
The closer you are, the less you have to touch them.
Yeah. I'll say this. Like when my family grew up, I remember friends would be on the phone with their parents for like a minute. Like, you know, where's my keys or something? And they'd be like, okay, I love you. I love you too. And I'd be like, why do you need to say it for a 2-minute conversation? Like, I was like, are you that insecure with whether your parents love you or not that you have to constantly say it?
Right.
So I didn't say love yous to my parents until
Did they say it to you, though?
No.
Okay.
No, it was just like, of course you love each other. You don't have to say it.
Yeah.
So like...
that's the thinking.
It felt like a very insecure thing to constantly have to reassure your family that you love them and they love you. So... that was my backwards way of thinking about it. But like only within, I would say, the last 5 years has my mom started saying love you and on the phone and stuff like that. So it's a fairly recent development in my family.
Really?
Oh, wow, that's fascinating. Yeah, so we're going to really get into this now. But I mean, like, because that idea, like, it's so funny that the idea that you walked away with it is that these people were insecure about their love as opposed to what the thing actually is, which is like it's constantly... expressing it,
right.
You know?
Exactly.
Right.
It's just unspoken. We don't have to say anything. We know it already
But the
exists.
Shit about unspoken stuff coming from a Catholic family is that you think it's okay, but then it turns out a lot of it's not okay because you assume there's assumptions going on either side. Like, I feel like that communication is what's actually required for you to actually know that the other person is on the same page
as
what
you
assume.
Well, not to mention this superstition in a Catholic family. I don't know. My family certainly had that. We say I love you every conversation.
My mom's Catholic. She says it every conversation.
Yeah.
And I think it's a paranoia of, you know, that there was also
you
this
might
belief,
die.
That you should never go to bed angry at somebody. God forbid they die.
I think about that. I do sometimes still think about that, like when I leave the house, that I always want to kiss my wife before I leave in case I die.
It's guilt prevention, I think.
It's guilt prevention.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. It's like you're like saying I love you, making sure you get that in before they go off and die.
Before they go off and die.
I kiss your wife every time I leave.
Just in case.
But it's not, you're not worried about dying. You're just getting one in on me.
I say, Lauren, in case you die. Give me some sugar.
And she's never creeped out by it.
Yeah, there's nothing weird about that
at all. She never minds.
We do it right in front of Kurt. It's not weird. I don't understand.
He's just
kind of
sitting there with his arms crossed watching the whole thing go down.
Oh, my God. I once had a situation one night with this girlfriend who is not my wife. And this was a crazy, awful time. We were hanging out and partying with this other person who was a girl. And then that girlfriend at the time was like, she really liked women in addition. So it was this whole weird thing. I would leave the room to like go to the bathroom or get another drink. They would start to make out with each other. Then when I would come back into the room, they would pretend like it didn't happen. And I'd be like, I know you guys were just kissing. And then they both would deny it. And it drove me insane because they did it like all night long. And it was like,
This was just a one night thing.
But there was the fact that they were like playing this weird coy game with me was like, this is the most alienated I've ever felt in a relationship.
And they also brought the sin of gay into your home.
That honestly, I don't think I ever got over it.
I never got over it.
It's so gross. Hmm. It's such a gross fucking thing to do.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine.
How old were you at this point?
I was 33.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, this is not like a 16-year-old thing.
Okay. All right.
These are fucking adults.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's even creepier.
These are adults. Like, so creepy and fucked up and made me feel so gross.
Yeah, did they think they were being cute and coy, like, this is funny? Or were they like...
But then I would be like, guys, I understand. Like, it happened so many times that I'd be like, all right, I understand. You think this is funny? But I'm telling you, you have to stop it because it's driving me crazy. And they wouldn't.
Wow.
Yeah.
And finally, I was just like, you need to leave. You're leaving.
Like a power dynamic thing, too.
They're like, you're a cuck. Like every time I walked in, like, you're a cuck.
Well, it's also, it's really insulting in the sense of like, don't you wish? It's like, oh, fuck off.
Yeah.
For God's sakes, if this is the best thing that ever happens in my life, I should just blow my brains out right now. If this is the best thing that's ever going to happen to me, I should kill myself.
A three-way at 5 in the morning.
Yeah, almost three-way at 5, a make-out-only three-way at 5 a.m.
I wonder what kind of reaction they wanted you to have on that, or they were expecting you to have on that.
I honestly think that the girl, who is not my girlfriend, was... kind of maybe not as into it, and my girlfriend was drunk and like doing it anyway, and so then I just think she didn't know how to handle it. She was a fucking straight up lunatic.
Oh, she
sounds fucking
insane.
Straight up lunatic.
Oh yeah, it's sociopath.
Yeah. A sociopath.
Yeah. I remember bringing two ladies back to my apartment once, and one was really on top of the other one, but the other one kept being like, Why don't we get my buddy in over here?
Like, yeah, hey.
She was really trying, and I was just like, listen, I appreciate it. If you guys just want to go at it, I can just watch. I'm not having a bad time over here.
It's a very Woody Allen way of treating that. Like, you go ahead and, you know.
Yeah.
Don't mind me.
Yeah. I eventually got kind of brought into it, but then, like, the girl that was sort of ignoring me got so drunk that me and the other girl were like, we have to get her home. Like, she's a fucking mess. And we just walked her home.
So it became a threesome of a different type.
We just walked her home, yeah.
A walking threesome.
I remember this. I remember bringing her to a deli and being like, I'm buying you a sandwich. Just eat the goddamn sandwich. Like, because she was fucking shit-faced.
Worst threesome of all time.
Yeah. It was a bust. Nothing happened.
A turkey sandwich.
Well, both of those stories are terrible threesome sort of kind of stories.
I feel like that's like...
It very rarely works out, I think.
Oh, it very rarely works
out. There's so much trust issues and, communication.
Yeah.
It's too complicated.
It's a logistical nightmare.
Yeah. It really is. Yeah.
It's very tough. But when it works out...
Yeah.
I just did the...
You did the kissing.
For those of you at
home,
I just did the chef
kissing. It's only worked out once for me, and it was fine. I would not recommend it.
I think that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard you say in my entire life. I would recommend it to anybody. If you're a guy and you like girls, two chicks. If you're a chick and you like dudes, two dicks. Get it's double what you like. It's the best thing that's ever happened, that certainly ever happened. Now, that was the best thing that ever happened to me. The full-on nice. Threesome, when it was all bets were off, that was the best thing.
Oh, wow.
Really? That's like, it worked out then, huh?
I mean, I'm not the best thing. My, yeah. You know, I got to be on TV shows and shit. That's probably a little better, but, you know.
Well.
Yeah, I don't know, yeah. You know, one day I might have a child or something.
Well, that threesome's still up there.
But it was pretty... fucking space. It was everything I could have ever hoped.
Really?
It would have been.
Was it like porn? I've never done one before. So was it like porno style? Like, did you guys all do the?
Was it porno style?
Well, like, did you? Because you have to learn about threesomes from pornos, right? Like,
that's it was totally porno style.
Yeah.
It was totally porno style.
Really? And then who was the decider on, like, all right, let's switch it up. Now you go over here and you have to have, like, the alpha.
Was there a director? There a director?
There was no director, and I don't want to blow up anybody's spot, but basically what happened was I had met two girls at a show who were very cool and very free-spirited. They were young. They were like 22.
And they knew each other.
Yeah, they already knew each other. They were very good friends. And they were sort of being flirtatious with each other throughout the night. And we were just, me and my buddies and whatever, we were just all hanging out. Like, I wasn't like actively trying to hook up or anything. And then we were at this bar and we got all fucked up and we were doing a little bit of the devil's dandruff and stuff. So it was a pretty wild night. And then we went over to this late night after hours that they knew about and we went in and they started making out with each other, but they also had their arms around me while they were doing it.
Wow, okay. And so they really instigated it.
Yeah, and then one of them made out with me for like a second, and it was 3 o'clock in the morning, and I just go, girls, normally I wouldn't be this forward, but do you want to just go back to my hotel? And they both went, yes. And I was like, holy shit. And I ditched all my friends. I didn't even tell them
sure
I was leaving.
Understand.
I was like, I'm fucking
I can understand.
Out of here.
But were you nervous? Were you kind of shaky? Were you like... this is it. Like, this is,
I had come,
well, this is lightning in a bottle right here.
I wasn't nervous or shaky. I was amped. I was, like, drunk and, okay. Like, I mean, but, like, in the best way. Right. Like, I was very clear-headed, but, like, I was pretty calm. But I had skirted against it so many times where it never happened, and it almost kind of, not so many, but there was a handful of times where it almost happened and never did, that finally this time I was, like, finally God is being, like, here you go, dude.
Yeah,
it's finally going to happen aligned. Today. Like, yeah. You got your break.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we had a blast, man. And they orchestrated way more than which is always what I dreamed of.
Yeah.
I always wanted to be in that situation where the girls were calling the shots
yes.
and stuff. That's so much more fun and exciting to me.
Yes.
For sure.
Okay. So it was great. Sorry, we're talking more about my shit than...
Yeah, no, let's stop talking about Joe's dick and get into this relationship.
Talk about our dicks.
Today's episode of Emotional Hangs is brought to you by Tula.com. Receive 20% off your entire purchase at www.trytula.com/feral.
Again, dear listeners, this is just for you today. Tula is offering you something very special. Go to trytula.com/feral. That's TRYTULA.com/feral. And you're going to get a special offer, 20% off the entire purchase, plus free shipping. All you got to do is enter this promo code, and here it is, HELLO20.
And but you're asking right now, well, what is Tula?
HELLO20.
Oh, that is the promo code.
Yeah, that is the promo code. But everybody is wondering, what is Tula?
Tula is, well, first off, it's a Sanskrit word, means balance, Joe. And it's a skincare, healthy living brand founded by Dr. Roshini Raj, a practicing gastroenterologist and media wellness expert, and Ken Landis, co-founder of Bobby Brown Cosmetics.
All right.
Tula empowers women to live healthier, balanced, and more beautiful lives by transforming their beauty regimen. They use a probiotic technology in all of their products.
Okay.
It's excellent for your skin. It promotes healthy, beautiful skin. And you guys can get 20% off your entire purchase and free shipping by going to www.trytula.com/feral and using the code HELLO20, HELLO20.
So try Tula.
So here's something we do on Emotional Hangs. It's called Air It Out, right?
Yeah.
Or beefing it out?
No, air it
out.
No, that's the
farting. So it's essentially where you guys have an opportunity to bring up anything that just feels like it's like an kind of an awkward thing to bring up, but something maybe you notice, something maybe you're upset by and never mention anything, or something that even if you weren't upset by it, you just wanted to say like, hey, this thing happened and I just wanted you to recognize it. This is kind of an open space for you to be able to do that with each other and no judgment or anything like that. Hmm. And you guys just to air it out, essentially.
Oh, wow, this is scary.
And the example, well, here's the non-scary version of it. There's the, hey, this bothered me and I never said anything. That's the sort of scary version, which you can do, as Kurt explained. The non-scary version is the opposite. And the example I always like to give is when we had Vince Averill and Jesse Pop in. Jesse was moving away to L.A. from New York. It was
our listeners have heard this example used five times.
Yeah, yeah. It was their last night hanging out in New York. Vince started crying because he felt bad. And Jesse was like, don't worry, man. Like, I'm going to make it. I'll be okay out there. And he was like, and then so Vince was like, I wasn't crying because I thought you were going to fail. I was crying because I was going to miss you, man.
Right. Right. Yeah. Oh, it's like, yeah, like a misunderstanding that was finally ironed out.
Well, this is not an example of something that bothered me, but one thing that, like, so we never talk about emotions or anything else, but I'll give you an example of the Midwestern, like, stoic way of doing that. Mm-hmm. So, like, earlier, I guess it was about a year ago, I went through a breakup. I was engaged to be married, and it ended really abruptly, and I was pretty distraught about it. And I think you were in Wisconsin that week.
Yeah.
Like, Joe was visiting some pals in Wisconsin that week, and he's like, get on a plane, just fly to Wisconsin. We'll hang out, play board games, don't have to talk about it. That's it. And, like, that was, you know, I did. I just was like, yeah, I'll do that, because otherwise I was going to be in my apartment alone.
Ooh, yeah.
Like, I had a dog with my girlfriend, and, like, there's nobody in my apartment. So they're alone, and, like, Joe's, we not only do our colleagues, but we hang out socially. So I was facing, like, a whole weekend by myself with, like, really, I don't really have a, like, because I don't talk about emotions with people, it's like my therapist and then that's kind of, and whoever I'm dating.
Yeah.
So when a breakup happens, I have no outlet for that.
Yeah.
Which is partially my own fault because I don't open up to people about stuff. But anyway, so that little gesture meant a lot because it was like, let's, you know, come out there, we'll hang out. And that's what we did. They're like, do you want to talk about it? And I was like, nope. And we just played board games and did dumb stuff that whole weekend.
I remember that it was even difficult for me to do that because I was like, I don't want to seem too emotional here. But like, hey, you should come out. We're all going to... Yeah. Because I think that Pee Wee Herman, that latest Pee Wee Herman
the
movie
came out on Netflix that weekend.
Yeah.
Pee Wee's...
I'm sorry you experienced two tragedies in one weekend.
It was good.
Oh, are you fucking insane?
John Lee directed that and I thought he did a fucking great job. You lunatic.
Look.
If you don't like that new Pee Wee.
Why? Because your friend directed it? So that means it's good?
No, because it's really well made. Yeah.
It wasn't fun. Because that's what I always wanted was a Pee Wee Herman movie where all the realities established by the other Pee Wee Herman movies are just ignored, where he acts so stupid that he doesn't know where the traffic light is. And then there's weird masturbation reference undertones when he's making a milkshake for Joe, the guy from Magic
movie.
Mike.
Have you seen Big Top Pee Wee, though? I mean, Big Top
I thought
Pee-wee.
This, I didn't think they could. This was like how the latest Ghostbusters was somehow worse than Ghostbusters 2. I was like, it can't be worse than Ghostbusters 2. It's got to be better than that. And I was like, it's not better than
all
that.
Right. All right.
Anyway.
All right. Shut
relax.
Up.
That movie sucked.
Nick. Yes. First off, I want to thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah.
I want to hear your response to that as well, Joe.
Yeah. Well, no, it was difficult for me to do that, but like you don't open up a lot. And so your parents, a lot of the times they will call me to find out what is going on with you.
Right.
And I talked to your dad that day for about an hour and a half.
Really?
Holy
yeah.
Shit.
They had so many questions.
That.
Yeah. I mean, they were really hurt by the whole thing,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. But they know not to call you because they're not going to get anything out of you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they called me and then we were all actually kind of concerned. You're all by yourself in there. And I was like, oh, how can I word this? I did it over text. I wasn't going to call them or anything. So, I texted you and I was like, hey, we're all just going to hang out, and I was like, you just put it on the found footage card or something, put the, you know, because we're all out here hanging out, so, And
that's
then,
beautiful.
Yeah. That is beautiful. So, yeah, it was great. We just did there and we didn't like talk about it really apart from, oh, one thing, this is unrelated to friendship, but this like saved that flight for me too. So I was on the plane.
I know this story and it's a great story.
I'll tell a short version of it. But like, so I was flying back and I had a connection in Chicago and I was like crying on the plane, but I was trying to be a tough guy and not reveal that I have feelings. And so I was like, had my magazine in front of me and covering my face so nobody would see that I had been, had my hoodie up, you know?
Right.
And so then I get on the connecting flight and I was like just transferring in Chicago, busy airport, whatever, but I just kind of had my head down so nobody would know I was sad, God forbid.
Sure.
And somebody walking past me, I didn't even see, you know, anybody going by, but I heard somebody go, "Hey, cheer up, brother." And I was like, who the fuck do you think you are to assume that you know what I'm going through and like tell me to cheer up? You know, that's like somebody saying, like, relax or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Right.
I was so offended and I looked past me and it was Sinbad. Purple jumpsuit.
Purple jumpsuit.
Two guys, you know, has an entourage next to him. And I was like, for a second, I was like, that couldn't really be him. But then there's this guy who was just working at the airport. And he's like, hey, man, Sinbad just walked by.
Oh, God.
And like when Sinbad tells you to cheer up, you kind of have to cheer
you
up.
Have to cheer
that's
up.
That's a sign from God.
That is hilarious.
From God.
Exactly.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, I got to say, my takeaway from your friendship is that some relationships are just self-sustaining organisms. You know, your friendship is like an ant colony. Doesn't have to be said, doesn't have to be told, just kind of does what it needs to do
you
organically.
You fart, he smells it. You fart, he smells it, and you guys communicate that
except
way.
Except he doesn't fart in front of me.
Oh,
he actually doesn't fart in front of me. I fart in front of him.
We have 5 minutes left before. Okay.
Do we really?
We have five. It's 1:55. Do you have something to say to Nick, Joe?
See, he had a sweet one. I was going to say something that irritates me.
That's
about
fine.
Me.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's the whole point.
Yeah,
well,
go for it.
I think, and this is such a small thing, but it does, for whatever reason, bothers me, is whenever you respond in text, when you say okay, mm-hmm. you always capitalize the O and the K.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's like a funny, it's like a funny thing, but like, I don't know. It's just, do you hit the capitalize on the K to capitalize
it? I do the double caps and then do okay. Because it is, that's how it's supposed to be.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. But
yeah.
That's what bothers me about it, is like, that's how it's supposed to be. You can't just do okay. And
yeah.
But even on the okay, you're doing it the way that it's supposed to be. See, I feel like an asshole right now because
I applaud
I'm bringing up
you on
something that.
Because the rules of grammar need to be upheld. Everybody
even
has fucking typos. Nobody writes anything properly anymore.
We've known each other our entire lives. It's okay if you don't do it absolutely perfectly.
But it's just a habit. I can't do like RU, like the letters RU in a text.
Oh, I can't do that either.
Yeah, so that's just an extension of that for me. You know, I'm sort of my dad was an English teacher, so it's tough for me to like
turn it off.
Both?
Yeah.
And also, it's at this point, what you should realize, Joe, too, is that it's probably muscle memory. You know, when you go to do it, it's just like, da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
But that is interesting, because I didn't think about it. But I guess it does say something like, hey, you don't have to
always
let your guard down. You can let your guard down.
I feel like you're still like holding that up to like, I have to be perfect.
That's interesting that's the point of it.
That is what the point is.
You want him to let his guard down. He doesn't have to be perfect in front of you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yes, exactly.
I loved it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joe.
It got
great
to something
work.
More substantial.
We did.
Anything you guys want to plug?
Found Footage Festival, we're on tour, so
Volume 8,
and we're playing the Edinburgh Fringe this year.
Oh, so awesome. Where are you at?
Nice. August.
The Underbelly, one of the rooms in the Underbelly.
Right. Joe just did it last year.
And I was at the Underbelly.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You guys will do very well there.
I had a nice time.
Okay.
Yeah,
we saw the
nice
Hannibal
time.
Buress documentary, and it kind of made us scared.
Look, it's
I will not go back.
I know.
I've done it for 6 years. I've done 6 years.
It is an emotional experience.
Really emotional.
It pulls and it pushes, but at the end of it, you're going to feel really great.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's something we wanted to do once before.
Yeah.
You'll enjoy it. And you're going over there with a conceptual show, which they will love.
They will eat your assholes out. You're going to be the toast of the town.
It's going to feel great.
It's going to be great.
Can we use that as a quote on the poster?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're going to eat these guys' assholes out.
Kurt Brownoller.
I'm at Joe DeRosa Comedy on Twitter and Instagram. Coming up tour dates. I don't know when this episode drops, but Clusterfest
next week.
Clusterfest in San Francisco, first weekend of June. Stress Factory, I think the weekend of the 22nd in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Punchline Philly the weekend of the 13th in July, and the weekend of the following weekend, Austin, Texas, at the Cap City Club there.
Guys, June 23rd, The Big Sick comes out.
Oh, wait. And I'm also in San Diego in a week for a weekend in June at the
Acme. Acme or at Acme?
No, San Diego. American Comedy Company.
Yeah, Company.
Sorry.
Big Sick comes out June 23rd. Go see it. In It wrote on it. And then July 14th, 15th, I'm at the Alamo Draft House in Arlington. Thanks, guys. Feral Audio.